This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, Irirangi Tumotu, MPR.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us...
Bob Stewart.
Bruce Markwell.
And I'm Stuart Burks.
Now, Bob, last time we were talking, you mentioned that you spent some time in Fiji, mm-hmm. and you were there at the time of the Rambuka coup, if you like.
Right.
And you came back to New Zealand soon after that. Could you tell us whether that coup had anything to do with you coming back to New Zealand and your memories of what actually happened under that coup?
Yes. Well, first of all, my time in Fiji was... by and large, a wonderful, incredible experience. And the Rambuka coup occurred at the time I was head of the School of Humanities. And the first thing I knew about it was that my secretary, who was a Fijian, came in with a face very, very grave and said what had happened. And basically, all of the then Bavandra government had been loaded onto trucks to taken away for detention. Included in that were a number of my previous colleagues. There was quite a lot of my colleagues who had actually joined the Bavandra government, and so that was very personal. So that was pretty serious stuff, and there were some really tragic events. The neighbour to the right of us, and we used to all live on the campus, which was in fact previously the Air Force base for New Zealand during the Second World War, and the buildings were all built very good homes, beautifully done in terms of getting the natural airflow through. But the family on the chap and the family and his family on the right of us had previously written in a book about Rambuka in a very unflattering way, and Rambuka's minions had arrested him, and he was subjected to pretty bad psychological torture to the extent that he's still not the person he was before. And so that was very, very sad. We joined a little underground group where we used to meet. It was a bit of cloak and dagger stuff too, actually. It had its kind of if you enjoy kind of detective stories or whatever.
When you say underground, was it underground,
well,
or was it just behind
it? Wasn't literally underground, but it was definitely top secret kind of stuff. And we were really on the outlook of anything like that. There were crazy things that the students did. We worked out a deal with the illegitimate government, and that was that we would continue to do our work. We were a university, not just for Fiji, but for 10 other countries. If they agreed, and which they did agree. And we sort of minded our business, and they minded theirs to some extent. It was somewhat violated, though, by the students, who knew that we had this deal with them, and they had these young guys, like 17, 18, with AK-47s, you know, and they'd go up to them and they'd go like this.
The students
to the soldiers.
Students, yeah.
I'm just doing a very mocking...
The thumb to your nose and wave your fingers at
them.
Yes,
that's right. Yeah. Quite sort of in most cultures, it's fairly insulting.
Yeah.
And so we had to have a little word to them that perhaps this wasn't the most prudent thing in the world to do. And I think I... but apart from sort of events like that... there's a sequel to this, though, because one of the subsequent prime ministers who came in, and his name has just escaped me, had two sons going to Massey, and one afternoon I spent in on a Palmerston North back lawn with this gentleman who had been a Prime Minister of New Zealand, of Fiji, drinking Yangona, which is the national drink. They drink it out of the Indians and the Fijians. So I have that, and my sons were very good friends with his sons at Massey and so on. So there are a few ways that we really interfaced. But one of the things I really want to highlight is that in the United Nations International Year of Peace, Fiji was the start of that year, because the time begins for the whole entire globe in that area, in that part of the...
You mean the time zone?
The time zone, yes.
Mm. Okay.
And we therefore had the first official event for the United Nations International Year of Peace, and it was a conference on peace which attracted some very interesting people from around the world.
So was this before Rumbuka, you mean? Or
this was this was actually prior to Rumbuka.
Hmm.
Yeah, and so it was quite sad that this happened.
Hmm.
That went off very well. And one of the interesting things from a personal point of view, first of all, the Vice-Chancellor was away, and so I was acting Vice-Chancellor. So in that capacity, but I was so supportive of it anyway, I was involved with it. And so I'd actually opened it, and one of the people who attended was the then Rotary International President, Stanley McCaffrey.
Mm-hmm.
And he came, and he was head of Rotary Foundation's Rotary Peace Forum. So I got involved with that, and that was a very interesting chapter. And they held peace forums in places like South America, where there was significant conflict. They had one in Hiroshima, and there was one in Melbourne, which I actually chaired. And that had the Deputy Prime Minister of Australia and Fran Wild, who was then Minister of Disarmament.
Mm.
And so there were some very interesting things. They managed to get quite a lot of conflict type dialogue, stimulate that parties to talk to each other. And it's just another example of, and perhaps it's a good segue, I suppose, into Rotary a little bit. In Rotary's role in acting as a supporter of not just the United Nations in its early days in San Francisco, in the meetings which were to lead to the establishment of the United Nations, but also UNESCO.
Mm.
And that's something, a story which is not, even Rotarians are not so familiar with that. They were actually... They acted as a secretariat in San Francisco for this planning group that led to the eventual establishment of the United Nations. Okay.
So were you in Rotary at that stage?
Yes, I was.
Where did you join Rotary? You were in the South Pacific or before you got
In the South Pacific.
Who introduced you to it?
Now that's a very good question, because... there was a gentleman, quite remarkable fellow, who introduced me to him, Professor William Maxwell. He was from the United States. He was an American black. He'd been to Harvard University, as I was to do later. Quite outstanding. He's still going strong. He's in his mid-90s now, and he's still as productive as he was.
In what field?
In children's thinking. He had an absolute passion about uncovering talent in young children and having the ability to cultivate that. And he never actually had children himself, not biological. Actually, they didn't even... adopt, because his wife was lovely, but she died some years ago. But he was so concerned about that, and that drove him. And he's written many, many books. I'm still in touch with him. But he was a Rotarian, and the Rotary Club of Suva East was my first club. And it was a small club, very multiracial, as Fiji is, and he and I were the only, I was the only European, actually, in it, as it turned out, because Bill Maxwell was is American black. We used to meet and have great curries. You get great curries in Suva.
Mm.
And we did things like support an orphanage. There's an orphanage, St. Christopher's Orphanage in Suva, just out of Suva, and mainly Indian children, interestingly, because the Fijians tend to have more of a extended family kind of network, and if one family can't look after the children, then there's always an auntie or someone who'll adopt them.
Is that parallel to the Maori structure?
Yeah, I think a bit similar, yeah, to that. Mm. Whereas the Indian culture is a little bit more individual, you know. Mm. And so most of them actually were Fiji-Indian children, and quite delightful and very kind people looking after them.
Were they mainly Fiji Indians looking after them, or Fijians, or were they mix?
It a bit of a mix, and also from New Zealand. The Anglican nuns, because there is a nunnery. There was at one stage in Christchurch. I don't know whether there is now, but they actually had Anglican nuns who were there.
Right.
But we used to go out and do stuff, practical stuff, and then my wife Mary, who my first wife, who sadly has died, was a very good storyteller, you know. And she used to go out and she'd either read or just give these stories to these children. They had enough English to do that, and so it was actually quite delightful.
Mm.
So that was very special. I was really proud to be a Rotarian. I'd never even had anything to do with Rotary. I didn't know much about it at all. And so that was the beginning of a Rotary journey for me.
While we're on this path, Bob, you could tell us where this Rotary experience started to take you, because outside of Suva, you had some other quite high-ranking positions in Rotary and did a lot for it. So if you could just cover that for us now, that would be very interesting.
Certainly. Well, that, as I say, really started from Rotary Club of Suva East, and then, more particularly, from the conference, because we had the international president, and he personally was also chair of the Rotary Peace Forum, which met three times a year in Evanston, Illinois, and in the Rotary headquarters. So it was quite amazing to actually be sitting there, and virtually all of them were previous presidents of Rotary, and very amazing people. The Royce Abbey was an Australian who was president of Rotary, and he was on it. And we later had a Rotary Forum in Melbourne, which is where he lives, and we went out to his place, and it was I've got a photograph somewhere of it. So that was great opportunity to see Rotary close up and see what it actually is doing, you know, in the world. And it's pretty impressive. I mean, you put that alongside the United Nations, UNESCO is facilitating that. You put it along the side of Polio Plus, with like billions of children who've been inoculated. Now, Bill Gates has obviously done a lot of good too.
But just coming back to the Rotary side of it, you were also involved, I can't remember what it was now, with some other major thing from Rotary International?
Well, that was really the main thing was the Rosary Peace Forum.
Oh, okay, right.
Yes. Mm. And then, of course, I've carried. That's why I've always carried on with that. But the obviously the Polio Plus has been a great passion, you know, for me. And we have something like 11,000 children that have from our club, Rotary Club of Terrace End, that are inoculated because of our interest in being involved in Polio Plus, and so that's really something.
Yeah, just you might just like to explain what Polio Plus is for those of us in Rotary perhaps the people that are going to listen won't know that.
No, fair enough. Well, Polio Plus is, polio of course is a diabolical disease. There's no actual cure to it. There are a lot of things that can be done to alleviate it, but basically the deal with polio is that you stop people getting polio, and so having a vaccine is so incredibly important. And what's incredibly important, when we've now reached a situation where there's only two countries, Pakistan and Afghanistan, which still have polio, we're all at threat still from polio because it still could make a resurgence. And so polio, Rotary Foundation committed itself to basically dealing to polio on the planet. That's been always been their vision. And we're still so close to it, you know.
And the idea is to completely eliminate.
Mm,
yeah.
So what was the criteria for that?
For what?
For, to say it is now eliminated.
Oh, well, it's quite specified that they will not find any cases of wild polio for a specific period of time, you know, and it's got to meet that World Health Organization criteria to say that, okay, it's been abolished. I mean, a country like India, when you think of it, imagine dealing with polio and vaccinating every child in India. I mean, that was pretty amazing.
And the program is to vaccinate everybody.
Every child. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And obviously you've got all kinds of, challenges that have been, some people giving the vaccine have been shot and, all kinds of things have happened.
Why is that?
What was that?
Why were they being shot?
Well, it's pretty hard to understand why. But obviously we know a little bit going through COVID that some people don't like vaccines either. But
Was it in some countries there were sort of rebel groups that didn't trust the...
Yeah, there's... I think it's obviously a question of information It's hard to judge the motives, really. There are some religious leaders who have discouraged their flocks, as it were, from participating. But generally speaking, virtually all, including Pakistan, I think now in Afghanistan, the government has been pro polio vaccination. I mean, how could you not be, really? But there doesn't say that everyone in that country is, and some of it is sheer isolation. Little towns in Afghanistan and Pakistan and mountainous areas are so remote. But then, of course, when you look at a country like Papua New Guinea, I mean, again, incredibly remote, and yet they have managed to achieve full vaccination. So it's very encouraging, actually, what's been achieved, but it's always just that little bit that's still left.
That little bit is always the hardest to get at, isn't it?
Yes.
And I think I'm right in saying, Bob, that the Bill Gates Foundation subsidises $1 for $1 for every New Zealand...
$2
for every dollar. For every dollar Rotary raises. So, they're right behind it, big time, if you like.
Big time. Mm. And, it's been a huge contribution because... it's incentivized rotary, you know, by doing that. I always think it's a very good way of, if you're doing a donation, if you can incentivize the organization to do it in the way that Rotary has been incentivized.
So you've been responsible for once a year organizing our Rotary Club, which is the Rotary Club of Terracine, in honoring this, if you like, and trying to get some extra funding. You've done that. You might be able to tell us just a little bit about the roughly the amount of money that's been raised through that cause, and you know, the number of lives that we might have saved.
Well, we've saved 11,000, basically. Obviously, saved them from getting polio, and obviously we've had speakers. We had one gentleman who's now suffering from post polio syndrome, which is a very nasty kind of aftertaste of polio, that you get over polio, you get your life pretty well sussed, and then you get post polio.
Tends to come in later in life, if I remember, doesn't
it? It does. And so that's something that I, as a member now of Rotary Club of Terrace End, which is my third club, actually. I was a member of Palmerston North Rotary Club. We can be very proud of, but also, of course, our collection of spectacles for the Pacific Islands, which is something else that we've done. I'll say a little word about that. Well, that all started at it was actually a service at the old St. Andrew's Church, which is being done up, the Presbyterian Church, and the minister was sort of making a point about glasses, and he got people to bring old glasses, and I can't remember exactly what the point was, but it was sort of the idea that you see the world differently through different glasses, and he drew, you know,
this is a spectacle, not drinking glasses.
Not drinking glasses, no.
Although that does affect how you see.
And anyway, so we ended up with people bringing a whole lot of old glasses, spectacles that they didn't use. And then suddenly the penny dropped, and I said, well, look, what's going to happen? And he says, oh, you can take those away. So I actually had a little word to the minister after the service, and I said, look, for crying out loud, tell them to put all their old spectacles in a box, and I will take them, because I'd heard somewhere that they could be recycled. I didn't know much about it. But anyway, when I made my inquiries, I discovered that actually Lions has been very active, and they actively work with Rotary. There's a joint project for collecting spectacles, testing them for what their prescription is, shipping them over to the Pacific Islands, and then experts go and match up the spectacles with the people who need them and can't afford them. So that's how we sort of got going with the thing. I thought, well, let's do it. We've been doing it now for, it must be about 6 or 7 years. But we've collected 3,000 spectacles, the Rotary Club of Terrace End, and that's just one people. One group.
And these are all spectacles that might have, under other circumstances, been discarded.
That's right. Or just take up unused, useless space in your back drawer or something like that.
Yeah.
So people really came forward, and we had a little... After every year, we have obviously our Polio Plus, but I always throw the spectacles in. And we now have a nice box... for that, which I try and remember, I get help sometimes to pick it up.
Yeah, a collection box at each meeting.
Right. And
you get people dropping them off each time
You probably noticed it's about half full, that one. And I did a facsimile of that at All Saints Church, and that keeps on collecting them as well. Plus, we collect them from the optometrists. And some of those already actually recycle them, which is good. So that's been... I think the beauty of it is that it costs you nothing. I mean, there's no... What are you going to do with these old spectacles? It's a use, and people really warm to the idea that maybe it can benefit someone else.
I think it's brilliant because I've seen one or two photos of some of the recipients of the these glasses, and just to see their faces and the realism that they can now see again where they haven't been able to, or see much better than they were able to prior to that. So I think it's a very good cause. Good.
This is part 3 of 4. Tune in next week for part 4.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.